Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, here with my co-host Manny for the Geek Saga podcast series, 90s and Naughties Cringe Factor. This series focuses on some of those problematic teen movies and rom-coms from the 90s and early 2000s that we, shoot, is it a love to hate or hate to love?
Either way, I'm Manny, and after having to deal with the final boss-level movie, American Pie, in episode 5, we decided that for our 6th episode, we deserved a break from the extreme cringe. Therefore, we're rewarding ourselves with a discussion about 2003's sometimes awkward yet still adorable What a Girl Wants.
It's fitting that sometimes awkward yet still adorable also kind of describes Amanda Bynes, who plays the lead in this movie, which also stars Colin Firth, who is also awkward, albeit in different ways. And from my perspective anyway, definitely more sexy than adorable. Wink, wink. Anyway, What a Girl Wants is actually very closely based on The Reluctant Debutante, a 1950s play-turned-film. In fact, it's essentially just a modernized version of that story. In it, 17-year-old Daphne, who has been raised by her mother in New York City, gets fed up with having never met her British father and flies off to London to do just that. Only her dad, Henry, is a British lord who didn't even know he had a daughter and is also engaged to a social climber whose haughty brat of a daughter is, of course, set on making Daphne's life difficult.
However, Henry really wants to get to know Daphne, and she has the added bonus of having met a super cute guy on her very first day in London, so things aren't all that bad. Despite the attempts of Henry's political advisor, fiancé, and future stepdaughter to ruin all of the things for Daphne, she of course wins out in the end, gaining the relationship she wanted with her father and a cute British boyfriend, and seeing her parents get back together to boot.
So we will begin our discussion with a list of 10 things we hate about this movie, then suck it up and admit 1 to 3 things we actually liked in our These Are All That section. We'll also rate What a Girl Wants on a cringe factor scale of 1 to 10 Zach Morris's before concluding with our Watch This, Not That suggestion for the episode. But before we get started, you can follow me and therefore all of the Geek Saga endeavors at A Geek Saga on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and YouTube.
And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Manissimo Art.
Last but hopefully not least, we hope that you'll check out the Geek Saga Entertainment Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It's a great way to support us and receive some fun perks in return, including early access to these 90s and Naughties Cringe Factor podcast episodes. Check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
And now it's time for 10 things we hated about this movie. Though in this case of this movie, it's less things we hated and more things that made us cringe a bit. Anyway, number one, Daphne's mom not telling the man she quote unquote married that he had a daughter. This one was okay. I don't know.
This is obnoxious.
This one is obnoxious. This is a weird one. Okay, so good for Daphne to like reminding her mom that she left him and calling her out again when her mom is all like, it's not like he got on a plane and came after me, because yeah, maybe if he'd known about Daphne, he would have. Yes, even with the lame there's someone else story that his family gave him. Okay, so seriously, I'm not one for closure all the time, but I can see this kind of situation just ending with them never speaking again. Like maybe if they would have added some more, you know, backstory as like, let's say what was going on there, right? Like if they kind of played it out and showed that life was miserable for Daphne's mom out there, and then it was difficult for Henry, and then okay, there was someone else, that would make sense. Like okay, they just got tired and they left. But the fact that they just kind of flew over it, that entire aspect, and just did a few little shots of her and whatever, and then it was like, oh no, she totally left because someone else.
Yeah, and I mean, and Alistair, who comes up again later because he's like still Henry's political advisor, by the way, that we mentioned in the summary, the fact that he just walks up to, I cannot for the life of me remember Daphne's mom's name. I think throughout all my notes, I just call her Daphne's mom, but like he just walks up to Daphne's mom and he's like, Henry wants you to go away. And then he walks up to Henry and he's like, there's another man. It's like, what, who believes this shit?
Okay? Well, here's another thing that bugged me about that scene was that he hands him a letter as if it was Daphne's mom that wrote it. And it's like, bro, do you not know your own wife's handwriting? That if someone like gave me a note that didn't sound like my wife, wasn't written like my wife, not the same handwriting, I'd have been like, hey, wait a minute, partner.
Was it handwritten?
I don't know if it was handwritten because they never showed it.
I think we have to assume it was typed, which is also weird. I sat down at a computer in the, so this would have been 2003 minus 17 years. So like mid to late 80s, I guess. Mm-hmm. late 80s, but I sat down at a computer or a typewriter maybe in the late 80s and typed out this letter and had my husband's political advisor hand it to him. What is happening here?
Yeah, like what is happening? Like, it's really weird. Like, if I got a Dear John letter pretty much that was typed out, I would automatically assume that someone has taken them hostage and they're making them write this like letter, you know? So I'd be like, no. I would have maybe asked a few more questions, you know?
Particularly, this is, again, this is not now. This isn't even 10 or 15 years ago. This is mid to late 80s. So she had to go search out a typewriter or a computer to write this note. No, that's not how people pass notes.
No, exactly.
Back in the 1900s.
Exactly.
It also seems weird that Daphne, who really wanted to see her dad again, didn't even attempt an email or a phone call first. Again, this is early 2000s. Email is a thing that exists. Like, no attempting that stuff. Just went full nuclear and showed up.
Yeah, that's the part where it's like kind of weird, right? Because when you look at Daphne's character, she's a very well-written character, you know, where she's like, yeah, she's young and she's a little goofy, but she's obviously, you know, living in New York. So she knows what it takes to like, just, you know what I'm saying? Not really someone that's just going to sit back and kind of let life pass her by. And she's so into wanting to meet her dad. And her mom is not necessarily like, oh, well, your dad is a bad person. Stay away from him. She's not doing that.
No, she's telling her whole like fairy tale type tales. And just going back to the main point of this, it is just so weird that she never told this man she loved that she had a daughter. That's bad. That's really bad.
That is bad. Yeah, there should have been a conversation or something about it of like, hey, but of course that would have brought down the whole house of cards, right? Because then it would have been like, wait, but you're the one leaving me. No, you're the one leaving me. Which one's the dumper here?
This movie gets compared to The Princess Diaries a lot because that came out kind of around-ish the same time. I don't remember when the first Princess Diaries movie came out. But in Princess Diaries, the father knew he had a daughter, but they were like, oh, it's just for the best that we not be together and that you raise our daughter literally halfway across the world and I never meet her, which is also bad. Bad dad, bad. And kind of bad mom for allowing it to happen in a way, but more so bad dad in that case. And then also we've got The Parent Trap, which of course was originally, when was the original movie for that? The 60s maybe?
It was like the 60s, yeah.
Remade with Lindsay Lohan in the late 90s or something like that. Mm-hmm. And with that one, it's like, oh, we know that you're pregnant. We know that you're having twins. You take one, I'll take the other. I'll live in England. You'll live in California. And we won't ever tell our daughters that they have a twin and like a father/mother. Wow.
Yep.
So wait, I don't even know what's worse here. Not telling the guy he had a daughter at all, or being the father who knows he has a daughter and being okay with never seeing her entire life, or being the parents that split, probably the parents that split the twin daughters, let's be real. But anyway, neither here nor there, I suppose. But also maybe don't have kids and not tell the person that you were technically married to, whether that Bedouin wedding was legal or not, that you had a kid.
There's a lot of like legal implications with something like that. I mean, even if it was like Daphne's mom was like, hey, I just think it would be better for the kid. But again, they can't talk because that brought down the whole house of cards and not even a conversation for 17 years, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, well, she did leave him for another man.
Yeah, supposedly, you know what I'm saying? But like...
Oh, God. Well, on a slightly more lighthearted note, number two, LOL, British slang is hard. Okay, I have never been to England. I will say, I guess, to be fair, I have been to Ireland and I did go to Ireland before I saw this movie, but I'm fairly certain I knew what a loo and a lift were when I was in high school. I also read a lot, so maybe that's part of it too. But again, we're talking like it's early 2000s. There have been enough movies that you would have seen in America that were set in Britain, even as a teenager, where you should have known what a loo and a lift were. That said, when Ian is like, the dog and bones on the blink, dude, you know she's an American.
Yeah.
Why would you, as a receptionist in a hotel in a major city, word the phone is broken that way? And also, granted, I've never been to England, but I've never heard that term, that phrase before or since.
Yeah, no, I have friends that are from there and I've been friends with them for a long time. I've never heard that in any kind of way. That's why like the British slang part for me was like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, I understand some of it. But that dog and bone thing, I was like, what? that one even got me. I was like, wait, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah, this one is a weird mix of like, it's a little bit cringe because they're assuming that a pretty worldly 17-year-old in the early 2000s wouldn't know what a loo and a lift were, but then also inserting this weird British slang that it's not like chips versus fries, you guys.
No,
it's not like loo versus toilet. It's not like lift versus elevator. I've never heard this before. Like you said, I don't think I know anybody who's heard this before, period.
No, I feel like it is a term, but maybe it's like a Cockney term and they're just kind of shoehorning it into the typical whatever. So that way people are like, oh, see, they do have, because Cockney has a lot of weird stuff that I'm just like, I don't even know what that means because I'm not familiar. I'm not 100% familiar with that.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. But still, dude works as a receptionist at a hotel in a major city, fucking London.
In London. Like, yeah.
Why would you know she's American? Come on.
It's like, I'm pretty sure you get a lot of travelers coming through here that aren't from here, you know, but you just had to like
throw her a bone.
Yeah. But it's on the blink. I mean, unless they were just going for like that, if the place was like a tourist trap, right, where you're like, okay, and they're just trying to really lay on the like British really hard to make people feel like they're in another country, you know, like maybe I don't know, but that place did not look, I mean, it looked like a hostel almost. Yeah. So it was like, this does not look like something.
And also like the idea of Daphne like backpacking around England staying at hostels is absolutely more believable than her staying at a fancy hotel. So yeah, a hostel maybe. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of very much like British people are so different from Americans in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But most of it's not really funny stuff, so this was the thing I picked out as being, you know, slightly cringe.
Yeah.
Because again, y'all, it was really hard coming up with 10 things to not hate, really, but to be slightly cringing over with this movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree with that completely. I just felt like they were just trying to lay on the British thing really hard. Like, hey, just a friendly reminder, you're in London. Just a friendly reminder, it's like, yeah, all right, like, I get it.
As if, like, playing the Clash's London Calling and showing all
I was London like, yeah, fights
along the way wasn't enough.
Exactly. And it's funny because when she had decided to go and I was watching, that's what I thought of. I was like, I wonder what song they're going to play when she gets there. Mm. I'm pretty sure it's going to be like a London centric song. So the second I started hearing London,
it was a good, honestly, the Clash, always a good choice.
I mean, the Clash is fantastic. I love the Clash. So I was like, okay, this is awesome.
Now that one was a little bit funnier. Number three is actually pretty cringy though.
Clarissa explains how to fat shame in quote unquote polite society.
Yeah. When they're at the fashion show or whatever it's officially called, I think it's just a fashion show. I don't know, whatever. They're at the fashion show and Clarissa's sitting there watching the models, you know, march up and down in their hoity-toity outfits. She says, "You think they'd choose Debs who actually have ankles? Those look like baked hams." And her friends are all like, hee, hee, hee. And I'm just over here like, really? Cankles? We're talking about cankles right now.
Cankles, yeah.
I know that was still a thing that people talked about and said around that time period, but she just sounded, it was like, again, how to fat shame in polite society. We're not going to call them cankles. We're just going to say, oh, they don't have ankles. They have baked hams.
Yeah, exactly.
Then later she calls the twins Peach and Pear, who we eventually see in totally normal clothing and are like totally beautiful young women. But when we first see them, they're dressed in these awful poofy like white dresses. And first of all, very few people look good in white. Okay. It's not most people's color, particularly not a pasty blonde person, but they're dressed in these awful poofy white things and Clarissa calls them, oh, should have named them Pumpkin and Gourd. She says that to their faces too, doesn't she?
Right in
front of them, these poor girls. And later, like, they show up and they're dressed so much more befitting, like how they look, like in blues, and they're totally normal looking young women. And Clarissa's like, oh my god. And they're like, yes, Daphne gave us some fashion tips. And I love the idea of all of that. Like, I love the idea of Daphne giving them fashion tips, but also I feel like it was kind of more their father probably dressed them like that is what it felt like, and less they needed Daphne's fashion tips. But Pumpkin and Gourd, really?
Yeah, that was I don't know. I didn't like that one. That was weird. But look, Clarissa was just high class garbage. You know, she was just a caricature of high class assholery. And that was the character she's playing, but nowhere near as asshole characterized as Armistead.
Oh, God. Number four is all about Armistead, which also that name, my God.
Enjoy.
Well, first of all, I love how you and I both, for those of you listening, like we're having this conversation in our chat about the notes and everything. And Manny makes a comment like, I keep messing up Alistair. And I think you called him Armistead.
Armistead, yeah.
That's close though. That's super close. It is Armistead. But when you said Armistead, I assumed that was correct. But then I double checked his name in IMDb before I fixed my notes because I totally called him Alistair and also called Alistair.
And I'm just like, wait a minute. Because I was looking through it I was reading it and then I had written something. And then I went back. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Hold on. I think I'm writing about the wrong person here. Like, wait.
Well, anyway, so number four, Armistead is such a fucking caricature. And there is also practically zero point in him existing in this movie other than to cause a bit of extra strife, such as it is, between Daphne and Clarissa. It's also lame. But that said, he also deserves to be on this list because of how much he is the worst. Well, maybe not the worst character in this movie, but he's definitely it's hard to say if there's like a worst character in this movie. There's like three or four people who are just kind of all on the level with each other, and he's one of them. Him and his friends are like ranking the models during the fashion show, and they're not being kind about it, or this wouldn't be on this list. Also, when Daphne appears, and poor Daphne, who was told by Clarissa that this was like a laid back thing, and then she tries to get it and they won't let her, and she stumbles into the back door and they shove her onto stage. None of this is believable at all.
No, but not at all.
She's wearing like a blue beret for some reason. And also, this is a total aside, but I don't know if it was her jeans just being like the lowest of the low jeans, or if it's just that Amanda Bynes has an extremely long torso, and I'm not body shaming that at all, but holy shit, like her jeans were like 17 inches below her belly button, it felt like. Because I don't think she ever showed her belly button. Her shirts always were like, they weren't long shirts, but they weren't cropped. But you could always see like 5 inches of skin between the jeans and the shirt, but no belly button.
With no belly button.
I'm not shaming her clothes. I am not shaming her body. I'm just saying, my God, early 2000s fashion. But also, I don't remember ever seeing anybody wear jeans that low and a shirt that tight and not seeing a belly button. I don't know.
You're absolutely right. Because now I'm thinking about it, I was like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, you're right. I didn't think about it because in that scene, funny enough, she's wearing the beret. And the beret is like one of my favorite accessories on somebody. I just love berets. So the second that scene came out and it was like the blue, which kind of contrasted the rest of such, I was like, that's awesome. Like, I wish I could pull that off. I wasn't even looking at anything else. That's the weird, I don't know, fashion part of me.
But the fact that they shoved her on stage in her very low cut flare jeans and white tank top and beret, and I think she was wearing like a little leather jacket or something like that. Okay, not believable at all. But anyway, possibly even less believable is the fact that Armistead, immediately when he sees her, says, she can dump tea in my harbor. How do they even know she's American? How do they know who she is?
Now, yeah, exactly. It just made it seem, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I think that part was just, he must have read the script is what happened in that scene.
I mean, it was just really, why? Just why? Like, how would he know? I can't. How would he know?
Maybe because it was just not proper. So he was just automatically coming to the assumption.
Oh, so there we go back to, we Brits were so different from Americans.
Exactly.
Not them saying that, but this movie very much.
Yeah. And I think that's what it is. It's like, oh, look at that girl not dressed proper. She must be American. Okay. And then all of us Americans watching are like, hell yeah, Amanda Bynes, fuck that shit up. Fuck him, you know?
So anyway, despite his prescience about her being an American, he's still gross about her, that she can dump tea in my harbor. There's some innuendos there I don't even want to get into. And then later he refers to Daphne as yummy.
Yeah.
And they're at the regatta thing. And Armistead is bragging about how women are, or no, wait, this isn't at the, no, I'm sorry. This is at Peach and Pears. Later, Armistead refers to Daphne as yummy. And and brags about how women are drawn to him, and then tries to grab her ass at Peach and Pear's coming out party, which just puke.
That was so garbage. I really just felt that with that character, they just really let the throttle out on this one. They were like, we need to make this guy as like
gross as possible.
Gross, as terrible as possible, you know? And there wasn't even a really good resolution to his character as far as I was concerned. That it really, like you said earlier, it just made no sense. Like, I don't know why he was even in this, honestly, aside from just, oh, look at me, I'm the asshole class.
So he also tries to front with Ian at the regatta, straight up saying, breeding always wins out in the end, which... Whew. Blech. This was probably the most cringe thing in this movie, him trying to grab her ass. And I will say this, the one thing that this movie did really well is that, especially for the time period that it came out in, Daphne stands up for herself, period. She knocks his hand off her ass at that party and calls him out on it when he's getting up in her business at the regatta and like trying to kiss her and like saying all these gross things about Ian. She knocks him into the water. And I do think that that was maybe a little bit like forward of its time.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, because I'm going to say this. I don't think they wrote it that way. I think they wrote it as like, oh, Americans don't follow rules is how they wrote it, right?
Maybe, yeah.
To where it's like, no, you're supposed to sit there and take that kind of, you know, verbal abuse pretty much. But with it being an American girl, you know, oh, America, because, you know, I got to give them the taste of that steel, you know? So she just throws them in the fucking lake. So yes, you're right. It is forward in the sense of watching it. But I personally believe that's not what the writers were going for.
I'll be honest. I'm going to just choose to see the positive aspect of it. That being that Daphne ain't going to take no shit from this dude who is sexually harassing her.
And with my statement, just understand that I had to really stretch for that one to find something. Because when I watched it, I just saw it as like, hey, this is awesome, man. Look how they made her stand up for herself, right? But I just feel like when I try to look at it kind of pragmatically, I'm like, you know what, though? They probably didn't mean to write it like that, which kind of sucks, because it was good.
Speaking of Armistead and his stupid fucking breeding always wins out in the end comment.
That was gross. I hated that comment. That was fucking gross.
Yeah. Well, number six.
Hold on. Let me make a noise for a second.
Hold on. Got to crack open my White Claw or beer. White Claw.
Exactly.
It is a White Claw. Okay. I got it right. Yes.
You got it right.
Yeah. Speaking of Armistead's just absolutely gross breeding always wins out in the end comment, number five on our list.
The kind of awkward, why do they keep making these remarks referencing to Ian being half breed and mixed race?
No, for real. I did look this up, because even though Ian is in fact the one who makes the half breed comment, the actor is in fact most definitely white. And I totally understand that they might be trying to make a statement here. I want to say it's Armistead that calls him mixed race, but it could be Clarissa. It's one of the two of them. They're both awful. So who cares? Yeah. They're interchangeably awful. But if so, like both of the comments, both the one Ian makes about himself being half breed and the other one about him being mixed race, are almost in passing. And again, the actor is in fact white. If there is some sort of different information about it out there, I could not find it. Everything I saw was that he was white. There's no mixed race ancestry. And the latter is certainly a product of the times in regards to casting, but it's also not cringe. Sorry, not sorry.
Yep.
I feel like those comments would have made better sense in the story if they were rebuked or there was more attention given to it, but it was just said so casually in passing that it's like, why does this need to be here? It literally could have just been, my mom married a poor guy.
Yeah. And I think that was like kind of my biggest problem with throwing lines like that in there, because it was like, yes, it's terrible, obviously, to say something like that, but it's always nice when someone like that gets put in their place. And in this instance, that didn't happen. It was just like, look, you've already made your point that this guy is a complete douchebag of the high class variety. But I don't know. I just felt like it was like, okay, that was kind of like, look, we get the concept. He's a weird, misogynistic, just fucking high class fucking asshole. But now we're going to throw this into the mix also. Like, you've already made the point of what his character is by throwing something like this in there. And I'm going to say this, where it's just like, somebody who wrote that part or put that in there, when somebody makes a joke and it's like, yeah, that's really bad, it's like, but how did you think that, you know? Like, how did that come into your mind, right? Probably because you believe in that, or you're okay with that concept of thinking, And then the byproduct was it fell into this movie. So I'm not saying that the writer is like a racist or something like that, but the fact that it wound up in here so casually, I'm not going to lie. I kind of thought about that for a minute.
Again, like, I don't think it's at all necessary for Ian to have been mixed race. Now, if he had been cast with an actor who actually was biracial, then it would have possibly made more sense, but he wasn't. And I know, again, casting back in shit, even 10 years ago, wasn't really necessarily the best about these types of things, but it felt like, oh, we're trying to add this like extra oomph to Ian being out of place when I've watched this movie probably 4 or 5 times before I rewatched it for this podcast. And I honestly never picked up on those comments. I did this time because I was obviously looking for things that were, which I'd never done before because I do love this movie, but it's unnecessary for him to be mixed race, for him to be biracial. It's just unnecessary unless you are actually going to have cast him with somebody who was biracial. Now, again, I know blah, 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 casting in the early 2000s, bad, but he's already the kid whose mom married somebody outside of the rich people / titled people spectrum. And we already know his grandparents paid for him to go to all of these fancy schools, and he decided it wasn't for him. And now he works a billion jobs and he's like the outsider. It was just a weirdly unnecessary, like, this does not need to be in here. Why? Mm-mm. Were they actually trying to be like diverse and failing miserably? Because that's kind of what I think it was.
That's kind of, yeah, I can see that. Absolutely.
Oh, the 2000s, the early 2000s, gal. Okay, number 6. Ah, yes, the codes of behavior / you're expected to conform talk that Henry insists on having with Daphne. Sure, Henry couches the whole talk with, I know this is difficult, blah, blah, blah. But honestly, boo. Boo.
Yeah, this was a boo moment for
sure. To him, like, asking her to change, and also kind of making it sound like if she doesn't, she has to go away or can't be part of his life, like, kind of maybe at all.
Yep. It didn't make sense to me.
My side note here is that, in my opinion, it makes absolutely no sense that he then races ahead 6 points in the polls after Daphne starts a quote unquote behaving. If the whole point was for him to appeal to commoners, okay, why? Like, if the whole point was him to appeal to commoners, why is Daphne behaving like a normal teenager a bad thing? And also, she is not a bad kid. Like, she is not over the top. She is outgoing. She makes friends with the bitey little dog that one, I don't know who, she's some sort of like royal family adjacent person. Everything she does, like, she makes friends with Peach and Pear, gives them fashion advice. Yes, for sure, she's, you know, not as dignified and like contained as the British people,
And you would think that the 6 points that he gained had to do with the public kind of really getting to know Daphne, and that he had this kid who's kind of, you know, I guess would be considered a wilder type of teenager, because every parent can relate to that. You know,
no, it was the opposite. It was only when he was losing points constantly, and then all of a sudden he gained 6 points in the polls when she starts behaving, when he is literally supposed to be appealing to the, again, and I am saying this, I do not feel this way, this is the way the movie portrays it, commoners.
Yeah, I hated that. That's what they said, you know, like commoners. Like, I hate that term. But it was weird because Henry, who he's a dynamic character, I don't feel like he would have like really went that route. Because, you know, it's like, okay, he used to be like this hippie guy who used to travel the world and like do all this kind of stuff. I could have easily have seen him pulling Daphne aside and been like, hey, look, let's win this thing. Work with me here. You know, like, just be yourself. But when we go to one of these events, just try to just kind of bring in the reins a little bit. So that way it doesn't attract attention. But I want you at my side. I want you to be there. I want you to be part of this. And as soon as the stupid party is over, go burn the clothes and then we'll go have fun and whatever, right? And when you're out on the streets, just do whatever you want, whatever. I would have seen that conversation making more sense. But him, like, all of a sudden just kind of going in the opposite direction again. And because I think this was after the whole montage thing with her taking him out and getting the henna tattoo and all that kind of stuff, or no? I can't remember if this was before or after that.
I think it was after. It was after, yeah.
So it didn't make sense to me that he had just experienced all this fun and got to live again, to where he's like, oh man, this is great, to just all of a sudden go, oh well, I have to be, you know, the stoic British man who's running for office. And to me personally, I don't know if anyone who's listening to this has ever watched one of those parliament meetings when they argue about stuff, because these guys get dirty and they like hit below the belt when they're arguing with their stuff. So to me, this even makes less sense just on the actual British part of it. You know, I'm like, I can't wait for, you know, Henry to get into parliament and start going with all the back and forth with these people, because he's going to go crazy. I'm excited for it. So yeah, this part to me just didn't, I mean, like I said, it's a plot point to move the plot in a certain direction. I get it. It's me nitpicking.
I mean, it's us nitpicking maybe, but just in general, like, yeah, don't be the person you actually are, who is a totally normal teenager.
Yeah, but an American teenager.
Oh.
That's different. That's because we saw the movie, how different people from London are and how different the American is.
Well, there is a reason that Prince Harry and Meghan Markle left.
Yeah, and I get it. Yeah, exactly.
Moving on to number 7. This is kind of, I don't want to say, this is like the follow-up to Henry giving Daphne this talk.
Yeah, so Ian kind of inhabiting this idea that only the sort of casual and laid-back type of people that he and Daphne are is the only way to be authentic and have integrity.
For sure, I am very much abolish the monarchy and eat the uber rich. Okay, I am here for both of those things. But setting aside inherited titles and having insanely way too much money, Ian also seems to think that being dignified and or contained in and of themselves is hypocritical, as if there aren't, you know, different types of people in the world. And the example I'm going to give here is my mother. She's a really good example of this. She is extremely affectionate with us as her family, but she is also a very contained person overall, especially with people she doesn't know very well. This does not make her hypocritical or a bad person. And she also, when she gets close with like her very close friends, she opens up to them too, but she is a contained person. And if you met my mom, you would probably see her as like friendly, but a little bit withheld. That's just who she is. It does not make her a hypocrite. It does not make her a bad person, except apparently to Ian.
Let me just interject for this one thing, because it made me think. It didn't really dawn on me until you started talking about it. But think about it for a minute, right? Because it's true. Because with your mom, yeah, of course, absolutely, right? That doesn't make it her hypocritical at all. That just makes her like normal. And it's like, you don't believe me? I'll tell you what. Go take a few steps in the corporate environment. You see a bunch of people in suit and ties, right? They're all fucking proper. They're all shit like that, right? I worked with a guy one time for almost 10 years at one of my old jobs, and we were friends on LinkedIn, and I saw him, and his profile picture was him on stage playing a guitar. You know, I mean, the guy looked like Santana, like up on stage, and I was like, dude, I worked with this guy for 10 years and I never knew that, because I always saw him as this kind of like proper guy and like all this stuff. And I'm like, was he being a hypocrite? No, bro, he was just getting some money. And then on his off time, this is what he's doing. Is that making him a hypocrite? No, bro. When I look at something like that, like if I would have been Ian and I would have saw Daphne doing this, I would have been like, hey girl, you're playing the game now. That's awesome. Not only do you get to be yourself, but now you also get to be this person and you're helping your dad and all this kind of stuff. I would never have seen it as hypocritical. To me, that's just kind of playing the game. It's kind of like moving forward. I don't know.
Even more so the way he treats Daphne, because he feels that she has changed too much and isn't being herself. It's just rude as fuck. He actually snaps at her. I mean, now, I don't know how old he is, honestly, but like he snaps at her, and he has to be over 18 because he's like living on his own and has a billion jobs, but he's acting like a petulant teenager. And he's like, just call me when Daphne re-inhabits your body or something along those lines. And I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, I did not like that at all. I was like, dude, I don't
grow
know.
Up.
Yeah, like grow up.
I mean, I know you're a teenager, probably. Maybe you're 20 at best. That's still basically a child. I know that at 20, I thought I was a whole ass adult.
Oh yeah, no, none of us were.
I can say that like once I got into like my mid to late 30s, and certainly now.
You're not a whole ass adult. You still got another 10 or 15 years to go, baby. Yeah. So just keep going.
And I'm not discounting that young people have their own opinions and that they don't have their own minds and that they can make their own choices. I'm not discounting that at all, but there's a huge difference between being a 20-year-old legal adult and being even a 30-year-old adult. Mm-hmm. And honestly, Ian, he's a dick. He's a dick to Daphne.
And that was like a complete dick move. I would have just been like, hey, what's going on? Like, what's up? Is everything okay? Look, me, if it was me and I was like, I was in that situation and Daphne all of a sudden is dressed different. And then she's like, oh, well, I can't go to the concert. My initial reaction is like, hey, is everything all right? Like, are you good? What's going on? Like, do you need something? Tell me what's up. And then Daphne would have just said like, I can't go tonight because of this thing, but I'll talk to you later and I'll kind of fill you in on kind of what's going on. And I'd have been like, all right, cool. Like, whatever. We'll just meet up. Like, yeah, I'm disappointed. I would have wanted you to come with me, but obviously you're going through this stuff. And I mean, I don't know. Yeah, but you're right. He was a total dick with the way he fucking reacted it.
Mm-hmm.
This scene in my head, it was just kind of like fucked, right? Because I felt like he didn't even really like her. He liked the idea of her. So, okay, he's a British guy. And all of a sudden he meets this kind of like wild child American girl who, let's face it, maybe it's because I'm American that she really wasn't that wild. She just loved life, bro. She just wanted to live life and that was it. But yeah, the way he went from like zero to asshole pretty fucking quick. Dude, she canceled one date. It's like, get the fuck over it.
She had a good reasoning for it. Wasn't she going to like some party that the queen was going to be at or some shit?
Yeah, it was some party that the queen was going to be at. And it's like, look, you're British. You know how these things work when it comes to that, especially with, what do you call them? Like the non-commoners, you know what I'm saying? Like there's always going to be something going on. Like just be grateful.
The monarchy.
The monarchy, exactly. There you go. So it's like, just feel great that you get to experience with your girlfriend both sides of the coin now, right? Because you're living the normal life, but you kind of get to see the way the things are over there. And it was totally pointless. This is a classic example of guys just having no chill. I would write the worst movie ever if I wanted to write a movie, right? Because all of my guys would be so chill that nothing would happen in the movie. It would just be like, bro, why are you trying to snap half the population away? Bro, because I'm really pissed. Why don't we just chill and have a beer and talk about it? All right, cool. And then closing credits, the end. it's like, I guess you have to have this kind of character, but I don't know.
I think that they were just trying to introduce conflict where there really shouldn't have been any. And they're both young. She's 17. He's like max 20. He's British. She's American. And as we've seen in this movie, you know, British and Americans, they just definitely do not mix.
They don't. Even though we've been marrying each other for forever. And face facts, we're actually brothers and sisters when you think about it country-wise. Mm. So it's like, come on, guys. It's not that bad. We're not that different.
Well, Ian was like, oh, Daphne's not cool anymore. She's not laid back like me anymore. So now I have to shit on her as a person. Rude.
You know, and it's funny because when I watched that scene, I thought, you know what, man, I remember that there was a time in high school when people were like that, right? It was like, oh, you're a sellout now. And it's like, yeah, okay, I can see that thought process maybe coming, you know, into your head when you're 15 or 16 years old. It's like, bro, you're 20 and you have multiple jobs. So clearly you know how to be responsible. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's not like you're like a child, but you're right. They're not an adult, but...
Well, number 8, the villains, quote unquote, villains are just so cartoonish. First of all, just going back to earlier in the movie, if Clarissa doesn't want Daphne around, why lie to Ian when he calls the house? He is a commoner or whatever the fuck. So him coming around could surely, and I think kind of does in a way, cause Daphne trouble. This was a pointless and cartoonish act in and of itself, especially as Clarissa is all big mad about Armistead, who Daphne has zero, like negative 10,000 interest in paying attention to Daphne.
Yeah.
Clarissa, you dumb.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, dude, this guy really, believe me, girlfriend, like I'm not touching him. This guy is a huge fucking piece of trash. But the fact that Daphne is like, look, even for someone like Daphne, they come from this, I don't know, royalty or whatever the heck it is. And you want to be with someone, like, do you still want to be with an asshole? Just, I mean, maybe because us as Americans, we don't 100% understand that concept of marrying through families for political and power and all this kind of stuff, that it's like, look, dude, I don't want to marry a piece of shit, regardless. And if Clarissa can't see this guy's a fucking piece of shit, it's like maybe because you're just a piece of shit, you know, and you just identify with it.
I suppose this next point is a little bit of a dig on Henry, because how the fuck did he not notice the evil stepmother / stepsister situation with Anna and Clarissa versus Daphne? It's not like they try all that hard to hide it. Also, if Daphne had just, I don't know, spoken up at some point, they're so over the top about it.
Mm-hmm. They are the caricatures of the evil stepmother. evil stepsister, and they really leaned into that Cinderella mm-hmm. type of vibe with it. It actually made me think of another Amanda Bynes movie that was called Snow White. It was a Snow White movie, but it was like
Sydney White.
There yeah. you go. And I loved it. That's what it made me think of, actually.
I will say that it's Clarissa who's really nasty at first, and mm-hmm. Anna is very subdued, but as time goes on, she gets worse and worse.
Yep.
Also, I gotta, in a way, give props to Alistair, mm-hmm. whose name is actually Alistair. This is a different person we're talking about. This is the political advisor reminder guy.
Yep.
Not Armistead, Alistair. He apparently played like a really long game. First conniving to get Daphne's yep. mom, whatever her name is, out of the picture. And then somehow getting his daughter, who had obviously been married to someone else at some point. I don't think there's any, it might be implied that her husband is gone, like passed yeah. away. Not that she's divorced, but she'd obviously been married to someone else at some point. She has a whole yep. ass kid from it. But just somehow getting his daughter into the picture to be engaged to the man he's been the political advisor to for 17 plus years.
Yep. Good old Otto vibes. Hashtag House of the Dragon. That's yes. what it made me think of.
Yes. If you've not listened to our Hot D Takes episode,
And believe
and
me,
you watch House of the Dragon, I agree. This yeah. is total good old Otto vibes.
Believe me, that was getting typed out before my brain realized that it wasn't a House of the Dragon podcast. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. And I was like, oh, yeah. Jonathan Pryce, he was in Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, so he was in Game of Thrones. And I think my brain was like thinking of it. And then I was like, oh, good old Otto. Because here he is with his daughter trying to like think. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. We're doing something different here.
Oh, my God. It's like good old Gossip Otto when he wrote the notes. Oh my God, now I'm going back to like her typing the notes.
Yep. This, okay, so ladies and gentlemen,
this is not getting yeah. cut out of the podcast.
No.
Because I'm sorry if you're listening to this and you do not watch House of the Dragon, but there's a whole thing where we have good old Gossip Otto like writing secret notes to people. And yep. now it's like, it literally happened in this movie too. Yep. All right, I'm done.
This was Otto's this was Otto's old job before he got the job as a Hand of the King. This is what he was doing.
Oh man. Or no, he just lived forever in a different universe.
In a different universe.
Like, this is the AU.
Exactly.
Oh, shit. It man. Is good all out of us. But then, like, just continuing on with the whole cartoonish aspect, come the fuck on, Anna, the fiance, during Daphne's own coming out party, actually drags her away and locks her in a room, and somehow nobody notices.
No, this was very cartoony to me. This was extremely cartoony to where it was like, okay, I get it, but they just locked you.
Did she lose a shoe along the way?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it was just like, it didn't make sense. And I was like, okay, I mean, I get what they're trying to do here, but yeah.
Leaned into that Cinderella vibe way too hard.
They really leaned into it. I felt like they leaned in a few different directions, but not doing it subtly. They did it like, whoosh, you know, and it's like, guys, why don't you just like glide into what you're trying to do? They were like, no, we got to go 100% because we're American, you know?
God, probably more like 150%.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Okay. Let's move on, I think, to number nine.
Number nine. Yeah.
Which also, by the way, just to be clear, I'm going to say, let's move on to number nine, which very much piggybacks onto what we just mentioned with Anna dragging mm-hmm. Daphne away and locking her in a room.
Yep. Daphne blaming things on Henry that he really had no control over.
As I kind of already mentioned, he really should have realized how cartoonishly awful his fiance and future stepdaughter were, and that they were trying to ruin things with Daphne. I mean, shoot, he even made comments about Clarissa that made it clear he knew she was a brat at the very least. Okay, he knows that she's not a good kid. And sure, I get that Daphne was upset when her mom comes and like saves her and she comes back into the party to see Henry dancing with Clarissa. But like, what was he gonna say when Clarissa asked him to dance? No, that yeah. would have been rude. No matter what, that would have been rude.
Yeah, and Henry is not like a rude person. Like, of course he's gonna say, yeah, of course.
He's British. They're so polite and contained.
So polite and contained, exactly. Yeah, so he would have said yes, yeah.
And then the whole speech that Daphne gives after seeing this was like, how could you not know your fiance locked me in a room? How could you never just magically realize I existed and come surprise me on my birthday? She's mature. She's smart.
No, exactly. Look, and this is one of those things to me where it felt out of place, right? Because you had this, I think one thing I always kind of like when I watch a movie or something like that is I always try to put myself into one of the characters, kind of whatever character I kind of relate to try to put it in there to try to see how I would deal with these situations. And the fact of the matter is that it just feels like it's just the tale of two separate Daphnes, right? Because you have the Daphne that's the mature, she understands. The Daphne that I know would have went to go see Henry afterwards and wouldn't have given that speech. She would have been like, well, no, I get how this would have happened because I was locked in the room. Clarissa took her opportunity to do this because that's the kind of person she is. Mm-hmm. And my dad's a really nice guy and he's not going to tell her no and be a dick. You want to know what happened? There's exactly what happened.
I love it. A tale of two Daphnes.
Yeah.
Even if she'd confronted him, and I use the word confronted kind of loosely, even if she'd gone to him at the party and been like, hey, this wasn't cool. I get that it's very teenagery for her to go after him and be upset, et cetera, et cetera. But there's no way he should have recognized that particularly Clarissa, but probably Anna too, were being evil future mm-hmm. possible stepmother and stepsister. He should have recognized those vibes maybe, but he also could not have had any idea that Anna would have dragged Daphne away from her own party and locked her in a room. I don't think Henry is the greatest character in this movie, despite my love of Colin Firth, but still, come on, Daphne. Exactly. Give the guy a little bit of credit. I don't know.
Exactly.
So last but not least, number 10, this is kind of a silly one, but I don't even care.
No, I love that you threw this in there because this was where my brain was at with this, okay? Go ahead.
So Daphne and her mom run away from London. They're like, whatever, guys, we're leaving you. And they get back to New York and they're just at a wedding because, by the way, Daphne's mom sings in a band and Daphne usually waits at these weddings that her mom performs at somehow. So number 10 is LOL. So it's totally okay for them. And when I say them, I mean Henry, Ian, Daphne, and Daphne's mom, whose name I will never remember, to all just crash someone else's wedding at the end, just so Daphne can have her father-daughter dance. And I mentioned Ian because, yes, Ian also is there. And Daphne's mom, name unknown.
Libby. It was Libby.
I'm sorry.
That's what it
I
was.
I feel a little bad, but also she is kind of just, she's like a plot point, not a character in this movie. But Libby and Henry just start making out. And I guess it's like totally okay for Daphne to just stop waiting tables to dance with her new boyfriend and for her mom, who apparently is named Libby, to just stop performing so that these mm-hmm. things can happen. Seriously, that is one understanding couple not being all, what the fuck is going on at our wedding?
Yeah, exactly. Like someone is like stealing the actual thunder here. I was kind of under the impression that maybe like the band was like included with the food and they were all ran by her mom is kind of like what I thought about. So I was like
it's a wedding planner thing where I don't think her mom is a wedding planner though. There's a wedding mm-hmm. planner that's like, here, I'm going to hire this band and also this serving company that mm-hmm. whatever. It doesn't matter. All I know is if that was my wedding, I would have been like, who the fuck are you people?
Yeah, like who is this? Why are you having a moment at my wedding, you know?
Not just a moment, but like, I'm sorry, the lead singer of my wedding band is making out with some random dude, and then also one of my servers has just stopped serving to burst the dude that the singer is hanging out with, and then also some other random dude that just shows up. What the fuck is happening?
Look, and I want to know.
We're Americans. We're understanding.
Yeah, exactly. We're okay.
Yo, not
with
at
that.
Weddings. Not at weddings.
Not at weddings. You have no idea. You know, you have no idea. Look, and I want to know the like logistics behind Henry showing up. Yeah, he got here on a plane, but did he show up on the other side of the lake and was like, excuse me, sir, here's 10 pounds. I'm going to steal your boat for a little bit. And then he rowed to like the other side of the thing. And then, and as he's pulling up, he's standing up in the boat, like balanced, you know, like, and it was just like, so when did you stand up in the boat? Like when you knew you were gonna make it? Or did you like,
they should have had him do a fucking Colin Firth circa 1995 Pride and Prejudice,
yeah,
where he just swam across the lake and emerged in like a soaking wet white shirt. Oh my god.
That's, look, but you know, he's there to see his daughter. All right, calm down. He's there to see his daughter, okay? let's let's breathe for a minute. Okay, look, I like Colin Firth too. Okay, I'm just saying.
But he's just not like, just there to see his daughter, though. No, he immediately starts making out with his ex-wife, whatever the fucking situation.
Yeah, no, you know what? That is true, because he really did only dance with his daughter for like a few seconds and then was like, oh, by the way, here's your boyfriend too. And how did he get there? Was he on the boat too? Oh, maybe he was rowing and Colin Firth was doing the like, I'm standing up on the boat while you rode, commoner, you know? Like... Yeah,
I still posit that it would have been fucking hilarious for him to at the very least have fallen off the boat and having to emerge from the lake in like a soaking wet white shirt. Come on. They totally miss bringing in like a whole extra group of people.
Dude, yeah. That part was weird to me because that was one thing I was thinking. I was like, shit, if I just paid like 20 grand for a wedding and these people just kind of show up and they start doing their own thing, like, I'm not with that. I mean,
no, even we Americans aren't that laid back.
No, dude, I'd have been like, bro, hey, Mr. Firth, I loved you in Pride and Prejudice, bro, or whatever it was that you were in, but can you just sit down for 5 minutes, dude? You know, because you're like stealing my thunder, dude. This day's about me, my friend, not you. We love you. You're the best. I get it. Whatever. Go sit down.
I think we're done with our 10 sort of maybe kind of cringy things about this movie. So
all that said, now it's time for us to mention just a few things that made it into our these or all that list.
Yeah, just a few, because there's a lot really with this movie. Really, but Colin Firth. Okay. I'm only partly kidding. He's not all three things on my list. I also think that this movie in general has a good message. Setting Ian's attitude that we already mentioned aside, What a Girl Wants is very much about being true to yourself and does a fairly good job of portraying that message. And also Colin Firth.
I totally agree with that statement. It really does, you know, send a good message about being true to yourself, and it's not weird or over the top. I think they did a really good job on just kind of telling that story, you know.
Yeah.
Things that I liked about it, Amanda Bynes, hands down. I just love her. She's fantastic. She has this very classic like physical comedy thing that she does that just comes very naturally to her, which I think is like fantastic. And she's believable as like being serious and then being like goofy, right? Like she's just believable like on both sides. And it's just so, I haven't watched an Amanda Bynes movie in I don't know how long, but like watching this movie again reminded me. I was like, man, she's so good.
Oh wait, I'm sorry, despite one of the articles I found, and granted this is a review from 2003 when the movie came out, but it is also on a major website, Variety, still available by the way if you search What a Girl Wants Variety review. So you love Amanda Bynes despite that she is a brunette, somewhat puffy faced person.
Brunette.
Yeah. Listen, again, this is from 2003, and this is a just negative, like a weirdly unnecessarily negative line about her. But the fact that it was worded like a dig, and
it was,
oh no, how dare she have brown hair?
Brown hair and like puffy face. Like maybe she was just tired, or maybe she was.
No, I think I think they're just referring to the fact that her face isn't, she was always like, she has like a normal person face.
It's a normal person face. Exactly.
Wait,
exactly.
Why is she puffy faced? I'm sorry, like, no wonder this poor girl had breakdowns. Okay.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
When a major fucking website in 2003 takes this otherwise like lovely movie, let's be real. Yeah. And the one thing they can say about her is that she's brunette and puffy faced.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know this is a negative, but this isn't a negative about the movie. This is a negative about the way somebody apparently felt about it. And how dare. Because you're right. Amanda Bynes is, you're right. She's great. Do I think she's like a, that she would be a great serious actor then? Maybe, or now, I mean, I know she doesn't act anymore, but then, I don't think she would be like some sort of Oscar winning serious actor. Mm-hmm. But you're right. She can handle serious moments in a film like this. Absolutely no problem. Totally believable. But also her comedic, particularly her like physically comedic and her expressions and stuff are just really fucking great. And that's why she was so great as young and teen actor. I'm still just shocked that that's even 2003. I'm shocked that somebody described her as the brunette puffy faced. Or Bynes. What the fuck, man?
That's a fucking shots fired situation. Yeah. Like I'd have been like, damn. It's like them like, oh yeah, you know, that guy from Tara's podcast, you know, the short black haired one. Like, wait, what the fuck? Why did you say short?
I don't think my head is all that differently shaped from Amanda Bynes' head.
No.
So you could totally call me what, the blonde puffy faced Tara?
Exactly. It just, that seems like an insult that like an elementary school kid would do.
Really?
To someone that they liked, you know, and it's like, that's what they would say to them. You know?
But this is in like a major magazine.
Yeah. See, and the fact that it got into the major magazine, I mean.
And not to like get into negatives, because I'm not trying to make this a negative. I'm trying to make this as like a, how fucking undeserved, because she was so, mm-hmm. she was so cute in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, and she took the serious moments. She handled them really well.
Mm-hmm. She did it really
and
well.
And she did, as she always had done the comedy stuff perfectly. Mm-hmm. That was her shtick. She was great at the comedic stuff.
Absolutely.
And she did so many good things before and after this that it's like, mm-hmm. how dare Variety? How dare. Fuck you. Fuck you and your weirdly judgmental, like, how dare she have brown hair? How dare she have
brown hair and puffy face? It's like, dude.
First of all, the puffy face thing is just weird.
Like, I didn't even see that. I don't even know what he was talking about. Puffy face, I don't get it. Just looks like it just to me, it looks like a normal person. Like, what's the problem?
Yeah, you know? I don't. Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. Anyway, I mean, so your other things that you liked.
Look, I mean, the brown hair, she's guilty. Okay. I saw the movie and I saw what color her hair was. Okay. It was brown.
Guilty of brown hair.
Guilty. Okay. So Colin Firth, obviously, he's a fantastic actor. I love hearing the sound of his voice. Oh, there's something that is calming about him and I just love it. And I'm a huge fan of like masterpiece theater, like period pieces. And I know that he's been in a few of them. Mm-hmm. And I've always been a huge, huge fan of that. Anything that I associate with that, I love it. The Daphne Ian love story part of it. What I liked about this was that it seemed like a plot B and not a plot A.
Yeah.
Right. So the plot A was her and her dad. Right. So mm-hmm. this is just kind of like a bonus throughout it. And they really kind of left it like that the entire time. And I thought that that was fantastic because even when Ian decided to go be a dumbass, it wasn't like it broke the movie. It was just like, oh, okay, well, she's focusing on with her dad now and stuff like that. So I really did enjoy it that it wasn't just like the classic, oh no, boy broke up with me. My life is all terrible now. So if I really wanted to just tear apart one more thing here also that I just was not crazy about, aside from the Amistad scenes or Amistad,
whatever. Yes, Amistad was a slave ship. Armistead yes. is the dickhead in this movie.
Yes, Armistead. That guy, not the slave ship. Aside from that guy being like the worst thing in this movie, I really wasn't feeling the montage scenes. I felt like the montage scenes went yeah. on for like way too long, yeah. where it's like, I feel like you guys are just trying to fill like a time gap at this point where mm-hmm. like, we got to have this going on for like this long. And of course the computer animated opening.
Yes. Oh my God.
Sequence.
I almost had that as one of my things, but then I was like, no, that's too much. Like one of the 10 things. And I think we like worked out 10 things that mm-hmm. were actually more cringeworthy, but yes, no, yes. The weird butterfly. She's not a butterfly. She was,
no.
She wasn't a caterpillar who became a butterfly in England. Like what is the butterfly yep. symbolism happening? Happening here. Stop it.
Yeah, I don't know what that meant. And the computer animation was so yeah. bad, even for 2003 standards. I have video games that were from 2003, like from the PlayStation 2, that looked way better than that opening. And it's like, why did you guys even bother? And it's New York City. How much stock footage could you find on New York City? Probably about a bazillion tons of it. You guys should have just mm-hmm. used that. This
well,
was
also, the movie was like an hour and 45 minutes long. And mm-hmm. like you said, I feel like the montage scenes were just
way too much.
They were just filler. They were trying to get it to an hour 45.
Yeah,
that's what they were trying to do.
I think they were trying to break that hour and 30 mark, like that 90 minute mark, which generally all movies that are not like an epic movie always sit at, right? Comedies always sit at somewhere in 90 minutes. A lot of rom-coms are always 90 minutes. And I felt like they were trying to do something different. And they were like, no, we got to add more stuff into it. Or maybe they just had a bad editor and they were just like, oh, we're just going to yeah. leave everything in.
One other thing I want to say, and this is like a total aside, if you look at the What a Girl Wants poster, where it's Amanda Bynes doing like a peace sign between two mm-hmm. British royal guards, I just want to say, I'm pretty sure I owned that tank top. Nice. I want to find a picture of me and share it, but I also understand that if I find a picture of me in that tank top, I'm going to hate the way I look in it because I know exactly when I was wearing it, which is like circa 2001. All right, it's time for us to rate What a Girl Wants on a scale of 1 to 10 Zach Morrises.
I'm going to give it 2 out of 10, honestly. I don't think it was Zach. I'm giving it 2 really because of Armistead and Clarissa, because those two people were jerks. I'm going to give it a 2 out of 10 because of them. But everyone else was great. Henry's mom was fantastic. I don't think we talked about Henry's
mom.
No,
we didn't at all, but she was great.
She was fantastic. She was totally...
Although, I will say this. She also knew that they were awful, that Alistair and Anna and Clarissa were awful, and was like, I'm just going to like sit back and let this happen. So, minus a couple points on her part for that.
But. No, true, true. I think at that point she was so done. She just wanted to like kind of like watch the world burn. You know,
she just wanted to shoot some fucking clay pigeons. And I don't blame her for that.
No,
I'm with you. 2 out of 10.
Yeah.
Which that might be the lowest rating we've ever given one of these movies. I don't even Mean Girls was previously, I think, the lowest rating.
I think that was the lowest.
And I don't remember what we rated it, but it was like around a 4 or 5.
Yeah, it was like a 4 or 5 that we gave it. But this one was easily a 2. It was just
there really wasn't that much bad shit in it. It was like, yes, there's some things that make you cringe a little bit, but I mean, like we said, we deserved
a break.
We deserved this. We deserved this after American.
This was the beach episode is what it was. The episodes where it's like nothing really happens. It's just kind of like, oh no, this is us just hanging out on the beach. Like I always love it when they, in Star Trek and stuff, when they have the holodeck episode, right? Where it's like, nothing's really going on. We're just all playing baseball now. Like,
have you watched the Orville at all?
Oh, hell yeah.
When Bortus has his, I go pee once a year. Yeah.
That's what this was.
I have to release.
We had to release American Pie, guys. Just give us a second, you know?
Oh, gosh. Oh, okay. Man.
Finally, what is our watch this and not that suggestion?
Okay, again, this is not really a watch this, not that situation. So what I'm going to say is that if you like this movie, despite its handful of only, you know, somewhat cringy plot points and moments, if you're looking for another American meets a Brit rom-com sort of situation, I know this wasn't really a rom-com, but it had its moments, Ian and Daphne and like the parents getting back together. So there are some rom-com elements here. So if you're looking for like an American meets a Brit thing, I very highly suggest Red, White, and Royal Blue. It's a gay romance movie and it is lovely. It's lovely. It's very enjoyable to watch. It's light. It has some somewhat comedic moments. It's really fucking cute. It's just cute. Watch it if you haven't.
I'm going to agree with that too. It's not really like a don't watch this, watch because this was a good movie. It was fun to watch. And especially if you were like around at that time and you want a nice little flashback.
And especially if you love Colin Firth.
Yes. Especially if you love, he's just so beautiful.
He really is.
What I would recommend is I would recommend watching Lost in Austin. I don't know if you've ever seen that before. It's either a movie or a television
show. Yes. Lost in Austin. It's a movie. It's got Kerry Russell in it, right?
Correct. Yes. I believe it's.
It's a movie.
Yes. And
also very cute. Yep. I totally agree.
And it's also
got one of the guys from, oh my God, what was that? The two New Zealand guys. One of them has been in like a million things since and the other one has just disappeared.
Fly to the Conchords.
Yes. It's got the guy from Flight of the Conchords in it. Yeah. But I love that movie. I actually watched it, not super recently, but within the past year or two.
That was one of those random ones that I came across one day and I was just like, oh, I'm going to watch this. And I was like, this is awesome. Like it was so
good. Also a good rec because Colin Firth, Jane Austin.
Exactly. So check that out.
As we close out the episode, thank you to our listeners for joining us for 90s and Naughties Cringe Factor-ish on What a Girl Wants. For the most current news and updates about this series, please consider backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.